Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission. Provide a meal. Give hope. Change a life.
Homeworks Premium Thrift is a shopping experience unlike any other.
Russell, do
browse
you know
our 12,000 square foot
in
store
in?
For gently used selection of clothing, shoes, books, kitchenware, home decor, furniture, appliances, and more. We offer free pickup of large loads and large items such as furniture and appliances. We are located in Douglasville on Route 422, and we are open Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, Saturday, 9:30 to 4:30, and closed on Sunday. Visit us at homeworkspremiumthrift.org. Like us on Facebook. We hope you'll stop in and check us out. You'll be glad you did. We help you help others.
Your furry family members matter, too.
Hi, we're Gordon and Sue Kriebel, owners of Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a family-owned business located on Main Street in the Trap Shopping Center. It's a family experience at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, one you won't get at chain and grocery stores. You'll find a distinct difference at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a difference in quality and in our natural approach to your pet's care. You may not be aware of better options for your pets. So come in and discuss your pet's nutritional needs and health. Our knowledgeable hands-on staff will be happy to help you learn what's best. We've been your leaders in pioneering pet nutrition and part of our community since 2003. Come out and support our local family-owned business. We'd love to meet you and your pets.
You're the God of this.
Hope Rescue Mission is a sponsor of Your Family Matters. For 121 years, Hope Rescue Mission, located at 645 North 6th Street in Reading, has provided a daily safe haven while ministering to the spiritual, physical, and emotional needs of the homeless in Berks County. We share the hope that can only be found in Christ, transforming the lives of those in need. Our programs feed, house, clothe, and guide men so that they experience a better quality of life. Over 10,000 square feet of thrift stores are located directly behind the mission, which is open on Mondays through Fridays from 8 to 5 and Saturdays from 8 to 4. We invite you to stop by and shop our large selection of gently used furniture, clothing, and homeless items as you support Hope. We're pleased to accept your donations of any of these items. Contact us at 610-375-4224 to arrange for a pickup at your home or business. Since the costs needed to operate and care for these men continues to grow, your support and continuing partnerships are so greatly appreciated. We receive no outside or government funding as we strive with the Lord's guidance and direction to restore those who seek our help to lead upright and productive lives. Please keep Hope Rescue Mission in your thoughts and prayers as we serve those in need. Again, thank you, Hope Rescue Mission, for being a sponsor of Your Family Matters.
When you're in the Lehigh Valley, you're welcome to worship with us at Calvary Baptist Church, 5300 Green Pond Road in Easton, Pennsylvania. Our worship services are each Sunday at 8:45 and 10:20. We seek to be a church that practices the ABCs of the Christian faith. A, we try to appeal to all ages of people. B, be Bible-based in our preaching and teaching ministry. And C, be Christ-centered in all our ministries. God bless you and have a great day.
That was Pastor Larry Bird. Check out his website at calvarybaptistpa.org.
Wake up and smile, 'cause it's been a while.
Hello and welcome to Your Faith Matters on 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty here in the great state of Pennsylvania. What a wonderful day as I was looking out the window a little bit earlier. So beautiful. What a blessed day. And I am so happy to be here with you today. Let me just start off by saying, no, your ears are not deceiving you. This is not Carla Dadassi, the host of Your Family Matter. Carla will be back with you shortly, I can assure you. In the meantime, you are here with me, Kathy Barnett. I am the host of Truth Exchange with Kathy Barnett on War Radio. I also co-host a morning show, It's a New Day, here at 1180 on Wednesdays. You can find out more about me and the Ministry of Truth Exchange by going to truthexchange.net. I am so excited for this opportunity to be able to come and talk to you about a very substantive and relative topic. It's every time we turn on the news, whether we're on social media or looking at the television, it is all around us. And helping me unpack this show are two very informed and highly educated guests. One first is Lonnie Poindexter. Lonnie, are you here with me?
Yes, I am, Kathy. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for being on.
You're very welcome.
Yes, Lonnie has a very expansive career, expanding into corporate, education, philanthropy, and nonprofits. He currently sits as the managing director of Black Conservative Summit, an organization that brings the voices of Black Christian conservatives together, a much-needed endeavor. He is also a director of CURE, the organization founded by Star Parker. Also joining us to help round out this conversation is Sophia McMorris. Sophia, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Great to be with you.
Oh, thank you so much. Now, Sophia is the founder of Wisdom Speaks. She is a certified professional motivational life coach, a motivational speaker, and is a graduate of Eastern Michigan University with a BA in political science and African American studies. So let it be noted, I have the right people in the studio with me today to help unpack a topic, as I said at the top, that resonates with every single American, and it has to do with what we're seeing playing out on the streets of America with this Black Lives Matter movement. And now this movement, what we're seeing on the streets of America, it is not just a Black issue, just in case someone is getting ready to flip the station thinking that it doesn't relate to them. It's not just a Black issue. It's an American issue. Now, instead of just talking about what we're seeing on the news, I think we have enough commentators out there just kind of regurgitating what they're seeing. I really want to focus today's show on talking about the solutions and talking about the core issues. And when I say solutions, I don't mean government solutions either. So today we're going to talk about finding the Black identity. Finding the Black identity. Lonnie, Sophia, you ready to jump in with both feet?
Yes,
I know. It's a mammoth topic, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
It is. I think so. And it's not a topic that I hear a lot of people kind of discussing, finding the Black identity. Now, let me just set this up for us before we get into it. And Lonnie, I'm going to come to you with my first question. But the latest string of foolishness that we're seeing under the banner of Black Lives Matter movement is what just took place last Friday, June 5th, in McKinney, Texas. It's being called the McKinney, Texas Pool Party. And now what really kind of set this off is a 7-minute video that has now gone viral showing a police officer subduing a Black teenage girl and unholstering his gun. Now, the 7-minute video is just a snippet of what looked like a really long day, but it does show a lot of illegal activity. A lot of illegal activity on the part of the partygoers, on the part of the Black teenagers. You see the police officer making numerous requests for them to leave, to be still, sit down, move back, and no one seems to be listening. Instead, you see a lot of defiance by the teens, a lot of back talk, a lot of mob-like activity, people running up on the police officer in a hostile manner. Now, again, I don't want to really talk about the event itself, but what dawned on me, Lonnie, as I was looking at this, is that it got me to thinking, we are teaching a whole generation of Black kids how to identify themselves, as victims, to identify themselves as being a part of the slavery struggle, the civil rights movement. And the media has picked up on this and has turned it into Blacks against whites, cops against Black. A Black issue. So, Lonnie, what do you think about that? Do you see that we're teaching our young Blacks to associate with an identity of struggle, victimization, and the likes?
You know, I cover this, and let me just point out that I was formerly the director for CURE. I actually today host my own radio show here in Washington, D.C., Freedom's Journal Radio, and we have been covering this topic extensively over the last few days. In that, unfortunately, I think with the Black Lives Matter mantra, it paints a picture of the flip side of that, which is, well, apparently Black lives don't matter. And I disagree with that premise. Of course, Black Lives Matter, but it paints a picture of victims' mentality, in my opinion, so that when you feel that you've been oppressed or you feel that you're downtrodden or you feel that, as some of the individuals that hustle race politics would deem it, as the man has his boot on my neck, it tends to foster, I think, an attitude where folks feel they're being disrespected, when the real issue is, I think, a lack of respect for authority, which in my generation, I've been around a little bit, was taught at home and then in the marketplace as well. Whether you agree with authority or not, first comply, and then if you disagree, take it up through the proper channels, taking people to court, get their badge numbers, things of that nature. But what you saw in McKinney, Texas, was obviously young people defying authority, and it's pretty scary because when you're defying authority that has a legal right to shoot you if they deem it appropriate, you know, you can have negative consequences take place.
I mean, yes, right? I mean, and that was probably the thing that dawned on me the most, that resonated with me the most, is that throughout this 7-minute clip, and again, it's a 7-minute clip of what looked like a very long day. It was, you could tell there was something that went on before and after. But we have 7 minutes that we're looking at. And the thing that resonated with me the most is the fact that these teenagers just kept talking back, just kept not listening, running up on the police officer every time he says something. And so whether right or wrong on the police officer, we're not here to figure that piece out. But what dawned on me is that we are teaching a whole, I think we're teaching a whole generation of young Black people to be defiant in the face of authority. And to your point, every single time the police officer will win. So it doesn't really work in our favor at that moment in time to be all up in his face. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. And I think the false narrative is that there's this tension between the Black community and law enforcement. And I'm a child of the 70s. I grew up my formative years in the 70s, and I would say that things were certainly more tense in terms of community relations between the Black community and law enforcement because the racial movement of the era. But I was taught critical thinking by a man who I deeply respect, who happens to be my father, who taught me how to conduct myself when dealing with authority. First, authority was taught at home because, oh, by the way, my father was at home. And so I understood his authoritative figure in the household. Mm-hmm. And so when I dealt with those out in the marketplace, I respected the positions of authority that they had. I was taught, yes, sir, no, sir. If they gave you a direct order, you complied, because common sense says someone who has a gun strapped to their hip is well within, well, let me just put it this way. My father said that, son, you want to be able to mitigate and diffuse any potential issues. You do that by how you conduct yourself. You cannot determine what that other individual is going to do, but you can certainly lessen the occurrence of something negative taking place by how you conduct yourself. And I was able to navigate the 70s when there was a lot of racial tension because of integration and so forth taking place in Southern California, and I can live to tell about it. Today, I would say that we're not in that era. This is not 1965 or 1955. We have a president who happened to have a darker hue of skin color, and he was duly elected twice. And let me just point out as well, Black Americans are only 13% of the population, so that was a whole lot of white folks that voted for President Obama.
A whole lot of white people, right? And I tell people that all the time, because they always say, you know, 97% of the Black population voted him in. It's like, yes, but we make up 13% of the population. So therefore, it was not just Black people who voted him in. And you have to take that into consideration. Now, Lonnie, I want to pick back up a little bit later on what you just said. And I think you thought you were going to slide that in, but you had mentioned that you grew up with your father in the home, and I think that plays a part to the core of the issue that we're dealing with, as we see these, you know, a massive number of young Black people out on the streets apparently not knowing how to conduct themselves. But before I get there, let me just turn over to Sophia on this issue, or on this question of whether or not we're teaching our young black people a false identity. Do you believe we're teaching them a false identity with this Black Lives Matter movement of a false identity of struggle, victimization, and the likes?
Yes, I do believe so. And I would like to add a few of entitlement and inferiority complex. I think there's a lot of where, you know, they feel entitled and they have a certain opinion about the police is bad, so I'm supposed to rebel and act this way and feel entitled to do so and not really realizing the consequences of what's going to happen when you do stand up. And like you said, the police always wins.
Yeah, you know, Lonnie and Sophia, either of you jump in here, but I was looking at the U.S. Census Bureau breakdown of the various population profile, and under the profile of black or African-American, I noted that 53%, over 50% of the black population is 34 years and younger. So the overwhelming majority of the black population is relatively young. What do you think about that, Lonnie, as and Sophia, as we look at what is transpiring on the streets? And Lonnie, interject in your comment this bit of fact. One out of two black kids are growing up without a father. So you have one out of two, and the only way that can get worse is if it's one out of every one. But as it stands, one out of two black kids are growing up without a father in the home. What is the role of the father? And when you take all of that into consideration, looking at what's going on in our culture today with this Black Lives Matter movement and what I just said, 53% of our black population is very young. What do you think the impact of all of this is? What's the culmination of all of this?
Well, the culmination is, if I can just give a quick analogy, and I use this in my show as well, is there's a phenomenon that takes place in nature in Africa where they had a herd of elephants on a game preserve, and they were having problems within the game preserve as they saw a lot of animals that were maimed. They saw the general condition of the jungle on the preserve was being torn up with plants uprooted, streams rerouted and muddied, and then they noticed animals being killed. They discovered from putting cameras up that the animals were being killed by a group of rogue juvenile male elephants in the herd. And so they said, well, what are the issues? How can we mitigate this or stop this? And they found a retired game preserve warden who said, you need to find the old bull elephant that used to be on the game preserve and go get him and put him back into the herd. Well, when they did that, there was peace in the herd. I see that same dynamic taking place today within the urban communities across the nation. There's an absence of paternity and paternal leadership within the family specifically and in the community in general. And so the end result, and let me just add that that number is not one out of two. If you look at the Mari report, the numbers average across the nation, 70%+ of black households today across the country are single parent, typically female head of household. So that is systemic breakdown within the community. In Washington, D.C., Southeast Washington, D.C., that number is nearly 90%. So I think that's at the root of what we see today, what you saw taking place in Baltimore, Ferguson, and other communities. Remember that mother who went out and snatched her son from in front of old police in riot gear with guns from throwing rocks and bottles at cops, and she grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and yanked him from potential death or worse because, well, he's a mother. Well, I would say, where are the fathers? Where was his dad? Thank God his mother cared enough to rescue him from a fate that, you know, it scared me to death when I saw that, but I applauded that mother for what she did. We need to see more of that, because when we see these young people out doing these things, and certainly that pool party is representative of that as well. Now, that was a middle-class, upper-middle-class community.
An upper-middle-class,
not
class,
the
right?
Hood, but the mindset is the same.
Yeah, exactly right. And Sophia, now that was an interesting analogy that Lonnie just provided us of what happens when you don't have an older male role model in the midst of all of these relatively young people, because when you don't have it, according to his analogy, there's chaos and destruction. And that could be the culmination of where this is leading without the older generation, male or female, primarily the male, stepping in. What do you think about that?
I think that a lot of it is that the people nowadays, the younger generation, have not been educated. I don't think this was always the problem, and there have always been single parents. I remembered something from listening to one of Lonnie's podcasts where he said his grandmother took 7 children and went to California and got a job and worked to help raise them up. And so, and there was no father at the time. And so, and they were fine. But I think it is that they have to be a strong presence in the home of some sort. And also, the influence of media today plays a big role, because the children and the people are now looking for an identity in rap stars and other things that are out there. And it's really failing them because they're not getting the right image projected to them.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and Lonnie, feel free to jump in at any moment. But, you know, I grew up in a single parent household with just my mother, no father. And I think I turned out awesome.
I also did, too.
However, I do believe that that is more of the exception and not the rule. I do continue to carry some of the scars of not having a father in the home. Everything that, you know, I mean, because a father, I mean, like, what does he bring, Lonnie? You're a dad, so you can, I mean, or you're a man, you're a father, right? Are you a father?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you can help us with this. I mean, like, what is the role of the father? Because in my view, he gives me my last name. He tells me that I'm valuable. He tells me I belong. And then when you have a father that willingly, by his own volition, turns on his heels and walks out the door, what does that tell our one out of every 2 kid on the streets of America? What does that do to the heart of that child?
I think it affects their self-worth. The father is the anchor. He is the strength, the support for the mother. Boys define how they interact with women in their lives by how they watch their father interact with their mother. If that's not there, then they're going to look to, as Sophia was pointing out, they look to popular culture to define how they interact with women, with hip-hop culture today. And I know you ladies both know this, that the term, I won't say the word, but B's and H's are the words usually typified identifying with women in rap videos today and in hip-hop culture. And that happens because you don't see the representations at home. Single parenting has been around since there have been parenting, but today it's the norm and not the exception. And the community used to reinforce what, in the case of my father, he had mentors in life that were what I call signposts along his journey. Because how did you navigate not having a father in your life? Well, he had his grandfather. There were uncles and others
right.
that he looked to. And then he got right. involved with the church, and the pastor became the paternal
influence. We had a community back in the day, right? And today,
yes.
We're so fractured and so me, myself, and I, and this is my little bubble, and this is what I'm going to do kind of mentality. And so we don't have what we had back in the 50s and 60s. Instead, it's more of, you know, you do you and I do me.
Yes.
All right.
That's exactly what it is.
You know, I would like to make a comment to that. Lonnie brought up the church, and I think that in the light of the way the situation is now, is that the black church or a church period has to play some significant role. But what I've noticed is that a lot of people, especially the younger generation, has left the church and kind of moved away from it. They're wearing their own crown. They've determined that I'm going to be my own God, and I'm not going to accept, you know, the Creator God. And I think with that, you know, a lot of help that could be there, and direction and structure and caring for
is missing. And so they're kind of running lawlessly, and the church is trying to do what it can, programs to, you know, seeker-friendly programs to try to get them back in. But a lot of them are not paying attention to that.
Awesome. Listen, guys, we're getting ready to take a break. Stay with us. You're listening to Your Family Matters host, Carla Dedessi. She's not here. I'm here taking her place, Kathy Barnett. Stay with us.
Andre Iguodala with 22 points for the Warriors.
Our team has been really good at just letting it flow, and whoever's night it is, that's the guy's night.
For Cleveland, LeBron James made just 7 of 22 shots, cut his head on a TV camera, and accidentally exposed himself adjusting his shorts. Fox News, we report. You decide.
There are approximately 6,000 homeless men, women, and children in the Philadelphia area. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission strives to feed, clothe, and shelter every member of the homeless community that steps through our doors. At Sunday Breakfast, we serve 3 healthy meals a day on every day of the year. An average of 600 meals are served daily. With your help, Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission will continue to ensure that no one goes hungry in Philadelphia. You can help by hosting a food drive, donating, or volunteering today. It only costs $1.95 to feed one person. Please help Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission feed the homeless today. To make your gift or learn more, visit sundaybreakfast.org or text the word THANKS to 41444. That's text THANKS to 41444. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission. Provide a meal. Give hope. Change a life.
Homeworks Premium Thrift is a shopping experience unlike any other. Browse our 12,000 square foot store for gently used selection of clothing, shoes, books, kitchenware, home decor, furniture, appliances, and more. We offer free pickup of large loads and large items such as furniture and appliances. We are located in Douglasville on Route 422, and we are open Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, Saturday, 9:30 to 4:30, and closed on Sunday. Visit us at homeworkspremiumthrift.org. Like us on Facebook. We hope you'll stop in and check us out. You'll be glad you did. We help you help others.
Your furry family members matter, too.
Hi, we're Gordon and Sue Kriebel, owners of Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a family-owned business located on Main Street in the Trap Shopping Center. It's a family experience at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, one you won't get at chain and grocery stores. You'll find a distinct difference at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a difference in quality and in our natural approach to your pet's care. You may not be aware of better options for your pets. So come in and discuss your pet's nutritional needs and health. Our knowledgeable hands-on staff will be happy to help you learn what's best. We've been your leaders in pioneering pet nutrition and part of our community since 2003. Come out and support our local family-owned business. We'd love to meet you and your pets.
You're the God of this.
Hope Rescue Mission is a sponsor of Your Family Matters. For 121 years, Hope Rescue Mission, located at 645 North 6th Street in Reading, has provided a daily safe haven while ministering to the spiritual, physical, and emotional needs of the homeless in Berks County. We share the hope that can only be found in Christ, transforming the lives of those in need. Our programs feed, house, clothe, and guide men so that they experience a better quality of life. Over 10,000 square feet of thrift stores are located directly behind the mission, which is open on Mondays through Fridays from 8 to 5 and Saturdays from 8 to 4. We invite you to stop by and shop our large selection of gently used furniture, clothing, and homeless items as you support Hope. We're pleased to accept your donations of any of these items. Contact us at 610-375-4224 to arrange for a pickup at your home or business. Since the costs needed to operate and care for these men continues to grow, your support and continuing partnerships are so greatly appreciated. We receive no outside or government funding as we strive, with the Lord's guidance and direction, to restore those who seek our help to lead upright and productive lives. Please keep Hope Rescue Mission in your thoughts and prayers as we serve those in need. Again, thank you, Hope Rescue Mission, for being a sponsor of Your Family Matters.
When you're in the Lehigh Valley, you're welcome to worship with us at Calvary Baptist Church, 5300 Green Pond Road in Easton, Pennsylvania. Our worship services are each Sunday at 8:45 and 10:20. We seek to be a church that practices the ABCs of the Christian faith. A, we try to appeal to all ages of people. B, be Bible-based in our preaching and teaching ministry. And C, be Christ-centered in all our ministries. God bless you and have a great day.
That was Pastor Larry Bird. Check out his website at calvarybaptistpa.org.
Welcome back to Your Family Matters. I am Kathy Barnett, sitting in for my good friend, Carla DeDessi. She will be back with you next week, I'm sure. But as of right now, we are in the studio talking about finding the Black identity, and helping me unpack this mammoth of a topic is Lonnie Poindexter and Sophia McMorris. So, you know, this, I mean, again, it's so large, and there's so much, I mean, like, there's so many rabbit holes we can go down, and you guys are just providing so much great content, but time is running out, and I really want to get to the Black identity, because as we've alluded to a lot so far in this program, we see a whole generation of Black people on the various streets throughout our country trying to identify with and resonate with what they believe to be the Black identity. Now, for an overwhelming majority in our community, to be Black is equated with being down for your people, dressing in a certain manner, speaking a certain way, even voting a specific way each and every time. And to do anything other is met with great suspicion, a barrage of name calling, and being told you're not Black enough. Now, I would like to think that this is a rhetorical question, but Lonnie or Sophie, I'm going to ask it anyway. Are there degrees of Blackness? Are some of us more Black than others?
I would say no, that there are no degrees of Blackness. In my opinion, if you live in the city versus in the suburb, there's a different way that you're culturized. In terms of the culture that you'll identify with is the one that you're in, not necessarily one based on the color of your skin. We do know that across the board that people have defined it as you need to speak a certain way, you need to have a certain type of dress, and not everybody prescribes to that. Hence, I think that's why part of the breakdown in society, in that we have two extremes almost. The one where, you know, you have people who are educated and are Black, and they don't want to be identified with, you know, all the ghetto mentality and the rioting and all of those kind of things, because they have some sense. They're not into all the foolishness, whereas you have other people who are interested in the foolishness and the ignorance because of where they're at. But I think that being Black is just, it's a uniform. It's a color of your skin, not necessarily an identity for you to prescribe to, because there are white people that can act Black, and it doesn't mean that they are.
Lonnie?
You know, the Black population is not monolithic in its thoughts and views. There's a rich perspective from various points of view that makes up the African-American experience in America. I think that popular culture tries to lump us all together into one mindset. Certainly, from a political standpoint, there's an agenda to do that because they're looking to garner votes. But the reality is, I often wonder. I was told some years ago that I talk like a white boy, and my white man. This is another Black man that told me that. I said, so because I have a decent command of King James English, and I can articulate my thoughts, I talk like a white man. He said, yeah. I said, well, so I said, what that says is to be Black means that Black people can't articulate their thoughts effectively or speak King James English. Well, that's not what I'm saying. I said, well, that is what you're saying.
Yes.
I said, what about,
exactly
what about an African? Yeah. I said, what about someone from Nigeria but lives in England and the hue of his skin is three shades darker than mine, and I have dark skin. And he speaks with an English accent. I said, is he talking like a white man? And then he didn't have an answer for that. I think that kind of typifies what we see today in society. Now, it wasn't always that way. I know when I was coming up that to be black had more to do with social mores and customs and things because many, most of us immigrated from the South, our parents and so forth, had to do with the food, had to do with that Southern sensibility and culture that we had. But even that, was you couldn't carve that out as being black because there were many whites from the South that liked soul food and sweet potato pie and all those same types of things. But today it's used, I think, as this this tool to be used. And then young black Americans don't know the history and truly understand it.
Right.
So, you know, it gets me pretty frustrated when I see it. I speak against it all the time. I would say this. My brethren are those who share my values and my biblical worldview.
Right.
That might not necessarily be mean my paint job.
Yes, exactly, right? And now, I mean, to both you and Sophia, I vehemently agree with the both of you. There are no degrees of blackness. One is not more black than another because of how they're speaking or dressing or the way that they vote. Yet, although the three of us are in agreement with that, we still see this separation within our community by our own community. Right down to the texture of our hair. Is it relaxed or are you natural? And depending upon which, you may be in our own community. So it's not so much that the white man or someone outside of the black community is relegating us to this monolithic kind of definition of what it means to be black. But I see that our own community is doing that to us.
Yes.
I would agree. I would agree.
Yeah, I agree also. And I have an example. I'm from Jamaica. And when I came here and went to school, I was faced with where the black children told me that I was not black enough and I should go back to Jamaica because I have a Jamaican accent and they don't understand me. And so faced with that, I said, okay, let me try to change my diction. Let me try to be, you know, speak more properly and more clearly so and more articulate so that people could understand me. And then after that, then I was told I was trying to be white.
And so you can't win.
Right. I go to college and, you know, I'm speaking in a more articulate and clear way. And I had a Lithuanian roommate that told me, oh, people from Jamaica think that they are white.
Yeah. So, Lonnie, what do you think has been the effects of such a mindset in the black community? Has it helped us as a people or harmed us?
I think it's harmed us tremendously as a people. Those outside of quote-unquote black culture don't know what to call us or how to deal with us, and they think that they must respond to us in such a way that they can say they identify with black culture. And I say, well, black culture is as diverse as your own culture. If you happen to be white or you happen to be Irish, Italian, or whatever, we all have a legacy of ethnicity, but it's really American culture that should define us. I think today, because of this, and I think hip-hop culture, I won't put it all on them. There's certainly other fingers that we can point, but I think it's our own fault. When we look and see what we have today with the complete breakdown in our family, at the end of the day, how I learned about who I was and what it meant to be, it was based upon my belief system. I was taught first and foremost that I was a Poindexter, and Poindexters conduct themselves this way. I was also taught Poindexters believe in God, and we look to the tenets of the faith to guide us in life, and we conduct ourselves a certain way. It wasn't based upon the color of my skin. We are Americans today. you know, but this divisiveness, and I would go so far as to say this current administration in office has been really stirring the pot in this area of this so-called racial divide. And I think it's done a real disservice to us, and it further impedes our progress and our success in this nation, which is a whole other topic about where the black community is today in terms of its economic prowess.
Yeah, you know, I mean, because a lot, I mean, and I completely agree with you, Lonnie. A lot of what we're seeing, I believe, is intentional chaos, intentional division. Because, you know, the old saying, divided we stand. I'm sorry. How did that adage go? Divided we fall.
United we stand.
Yes.
And divided we stand.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Had a mind freeze there for a moment. But united we stand, divided we fall. And so while we're all watching what's going on and you know, throughout our country with the Black Lives Matter movement, even with the homosexuality, what's going on behind the scenes by those in a position of power, they're literally changing the definition of who America is. They're redefining the Constitution. They're redefining how we engage in politics and international dealings, major significant issues. But we're over here being, you know, divided. It's like a sleight of hand. We're, you know, they're having us focused over here on the left when we should be looking to the right. But now let me move quickly because time is once again escaping us. We have some in our country who would like to pretend that slavery never existed, but it did exist. And because it did, there are some lingering effects. One of the effects of slavery is that it severed the link between the black community and its ancestral heritage. And now that is a fact. It is undeniable. Most of us cannot use sites like Ancestry.com to discover our roots, to discover the worth of our family name, as most of us have the names of our former slave owners. In many regards, most black Americans have adopted the identity of another. Now, given this reality, Lonnie, where does the black community draw from to discover their own identity, to discover their own worth as a people?
Well, you know, slavery had an impact on us for obvious reasons, and we know the history of slavery, but I think there's some misinformation about in terms of the effects that it had on us as a community. Through my own research and those I work with in this field who do demographic studies like at the Family Research Council and Heritage Foundation and Star Parker's organization as well, I determined that after slavery, after emancipation, and during Reconstruction, the black community, whose families were severed because of slavery, went and found their family members and reunited their family members and began to build, even with dealing with the KKK and Jim Crow and separate but equal, the statistics show that our family units were intact, two-parent households, and in some instances, if you look right around the time of the Depression, that our families were more intact than our white brothers and sisters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so like, most definitely, you know, and I often kind of point to that during times of real oppression, like with the Jim Crow laws, we saw 67% of fathers staying home. Today, 55% of our children are growing up without a father, specifically in the home. But for example, when I'm talking to my friends who are not black and they begin to tell me how they went on one side or the other, and now they have done a family tree, they've dated themselves all the way back to England, you know, to their Irish roots, the worth of their original family name, many in the black community cannot identify with that. You know, because of what happened with slavery and being bred and kind of sold off, and you don't know who you are. You don't, you know, we can't go back to Africa and say, okay, well, these are my people group. This is where I come from. Let me learn a little bit about that. And so as we're, but we see African-American black people today trying to identify with who, you know, with where they come from. How do we discover that identity?
Our Christian, our identity should be wrapped in and around, in my opinion, our Christian identity, because that's our true heritage, our ethnicity as it traces back. Yeah, there are gaps because of slavery. Thank God for mitochondrial DNA testing, because now they can determine where in Africa you were, all the way back amongst Adam and Eve.
I know.
for a fee. But, you know, I'm a Poindexter. And so the Poindexter's heritage, we traced back to rural Virginia because that's where the plantation is, where the white branch and the black branch. I identify, obviously, with the black branch because I happen to be black, but it's my Christian heritage going forward that I most identify with. I think that's what we need to focus on because at the end of the day, that's what sustained us and that's what the Word of God says we should look to.
I agree, Lonnie. Sophia?
I think Lonnie brought up a great point that our identity has to be our Christian roots. We need to be connected to our Creator and reflecting Him. I think that's where our identity needs to come from, not necessarily from whether you're able to trace back, especially when you say, I'm a Christian, I have accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior. He's like, you're no longer, you're in the world, but not off the world. And so our identity should be that of God. And so I was watching a program with a medical examiner, and in her opinion, she said that death is the great equalizer. I don't believe, for me, yes, that death is the great equalizer, but Jesus is. So whether you have bootstraps to pull yourself up with or no shoes at all, that God is able to cause you to prosper and have success and to live an abundant life in Him, not outside.
Preach it, Sophia. I'm not
Amen,
mad.
Man, sister.
I'm not mad at you at all. Now, Lonnie and Sophia, we're getting ready to come to the close of this program, but you know, what do we need? What is the message that needs to go to that needs to go out to the black community in this hour? You know, during during a time that you would be very familiar with, Lonnie, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., you know, he preached a message that resonated with his time, with the struggles our country were contending with then. Now we look at the black community and we see a new struggle, not so much from without, but from within. What do you believe the message need to be to the black community?
I think we need to return back to our first love, to Him who sustained us through slavery, Jim Crow, second-class citizenship, instilled us as strong, intact family units during the worst of times for oppression for us as a people. That's what we need to return to because I think we've drifted away from that. And when we do that, we're able to do something that I think is first and foremost, is get government up out of the black family.
Yes. Yes. Sophia, any last comments?
Yes. Education, a lot of people talk about education is the key, and I do agree that education, but not so much education in learning books like that, I feel is essential and important. And it is important to get an education and to do those things. But I think we also need to educate ourselves on God. Because anyone who recognizes God, in the past we have been a great spiritual people and we have had that connection. That is how a lot of people made it through slavery. The church was that place where people were brought in and educated and taught, and the movements that rose up, the Martin Luther Kings, started in those places. And I think that's where we need to go back to and get educated. Get educated about what our soul really needs. And it's not a lot of this foolishness going on, but it is that it needs to connect to a Creator. The soul that's not connected to a Creator dies. And so we want life, and we want to be able to live that life to the full. And that's what Jesus offers us.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, and as we look at the world around us, slavery existed. It did happen.
Yes.
A very ugly stain in America, I believe, to a very large degree. America has righted that wrong. I believe racism continues to exist. I submit that it exists on both sides of the aisle.
Yes.
I believe that there are some intentional systemic disenfranchisement that's going on, and profiling and all of this and all of that, and a disinvestment in the black community. I get it. I see it. I get it. I don't think it is necessarily from white people, you know, that or we can just kind of relegate it to, you know, white against black. And nonetheless, Lonnie, you may find this interesting. I think I've already mentioned it to you, Sophia, once before. But my family and I had the opportunity to travel along some of the stations along the Underground Railroad. And that was such a mind-blowing kind of experience to kind of retrace those steps and to put yourself in the shoes, even if they had shoes back then, of the escaped slaves. And as we were going through, we had an opportunity to read one of the stories of one of the escaped slaves. Her name is Betsy. And Betsy was a slave. She had to work in the field. So she wrapped her little boy up, put him at the bottom of an oak tree, and later found out that he almost died. And that was reason enough for Betsy to say, I want freedom. If not for me, then for my child. And the thing that resonated with me is that Betsy was a slave. Mm-hmm. Everything about Betsy's environment says she wasn't even human. That she had no rights. She did not control her destiny, her freedom. She was at the whim of everyone outside of herself. And yet she said, regardless of what my community is saying to me, regardless of what the obstacles are that I have to overcome, I want freedom. And so she set out, just her and her child alone, to create a better situation for herself and her child. And so then I look at our community today. We sit inside of our communities, wherever they may be, and we say, well, I can't be because of the white man. I can't be because of racial profiling. I can't do anything because education, because of whatever lack. And that just, I mean, it just rings false to me. Lonnie?
Amen, sister.
Amen. So be it. I mean, but you know, it was just such a profound moment to when it dawned on me. Wait a minute, Betsy was a slave. She wasn't even considered human. I mean, you know, I mean, black people are considered human today, but she wasn't even considered human. So talk about obstacles, and yet she was not a victim. Yet she refused to identify herself as, you know, the equivalent of a cattle. Sophia?
I agree. I think what happens in today is there's this great inferiority complex, and that people have put themselves in that place of, I can't because all of this kind of thing. But what they want is that somebody needs to come in and usher everything in front of them, and they just, you know, receive it or take it in and still ask for more. And nobody's really trying to say, I need to get up and determine in within myself that I am a capable person, and that I'm able to do things, and I'm able to change my own circumstance. I'm able to think differently. They were kind of just drinking the Kool-Aid and staying in this addictive way that somebody always needs to take care of me instead of I need to, and then I need to help some other people to come along with me.
I agree. Lonnie, anything you want to add?
Powerfully stated. My final comment would be, if a little lady in the 1940s with a seventh grade education and no husband and five kids can have the vision because she saw an orange crate that depicted a picture of sunny Southern Californian beaches and say, that's where I want my children to grow up, and single-handedly move them by herself to California on a train during segregation, which is a whole other story, that says that even though she was a sharecropper, even though she was truly in second-class citizenship, she didn't see herself as a victim. And she taught her children that it could accomplish anything they wanted if they had faith in God and focus on their goals. And that's where we need to get back to today. I think that's our rich heritage of us as black Americans, and I think that's steeped in the American ideal.
Thank you so much, Lonnie and Sophia.
You as well.
We are victors, not victims. You've been listening to Kathy Barnett sitting in for my friend Carla DeDessi on Your Family Matters at 1180 WFYL. Thank you so much. Have a blessed day. Remember, we are not victims. Black, white, green, purple, we are victors. God bless. The joy that you bring to my life. And ooh, there's something about the way your sun shines on my face. It's a love so true I can never get enough.
Fox News Radio. I'm Dave Anthony. It's usually Republican arms he's twisting. This time President Obama's trying to get skeptical fellow Democrats on his side. Back.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, girl.
Hi.
Good job. Thank you.